Good afternoon, everybody. This is the History of Horticultural Science Working Group, and we've had some wonderful meetings. Last time we had one on Burbank. We've had one on Hawaiian horticulture. We've had one on what's hot, what's not, and one on the history of the organic movement. And I'm pleased to present today a workshop on Nikolai Ivanovich Vavilov. He's a plant genetic resource pioneer, and he's a hero. Every group needs a hero, and he's our hero. He's like Galileo. He's like Bruno Gordiano. He's like Lavoisier. He's like Karpachenko. I mean, he's a martyr of genetics, a martyr of horticulture, a martyr of science, and he's our hero. And so the point of this workshop is twofold. One, to celebrate the life and career of Nicholas Ivanovich Vavilov, and the second one is to bring into focus the enduring impact of Vavilov on genetics, plant breeding, and horticulture. So we're going to have four lectures, and I'm going to present the first one on his life, and I've entitled it Plant Geographer, Geneticist, and Martyr of Science. Okay, and that's me, and I'm from Purdue University. I'll be followed by Kevin Folta, who will speak on molecular mechanisms and laws of homologous variation. And he is from, as I said, the University of Florida. I'll be followed by Gary Paul Nabum, but unfortunately he fell off a roof last week. And so his lecture will be, he fortunately sent his lecture, and his lecture will be given by Kim Hummer from California. And it will be followed by her lecture. Well, his lecture will be called Vavilov Census of Crop Origins versus Census of Diversity. How does that distinction matter? And Kim Hummer will follow automatically with her talk on Vavilov Census of Diversity, Implications, and Impact. Because, you know, Vavilov is the hero of genetic resource people. Okay, so first, my beginning lecture on Vavilov, again, plant geographer, geneticist, and martyr of science. And this is him. He was a very handsome fellow. He really was. I like him. I have my first mistake here. He was born in 1878, so not 1874. I don't know how that got in there. He's born in Moscow. Unfortunately, he came from prosperous parents, and it turned out when you came from prosperous parents, that was a mark against you in Russia. But his family does derive from pioneering, peasant stock, okay, and so he comes from the people, okay. He died in prison of starvation in 1943, so he is one of the victims of Stalin. So that is Nicholas Vavilov. This is him as a student in 1909. He went to the Petrovskaya Agricultural Academy at that time. 1909, it was a part of the Tsarist regime, and the students wore military uniforms, which I think is very interesting. So that is young Nikolai wearing his student uniform of the academy. Okay, this is his family. Okay, this is him on the left. Okay. And the middle is his mother, very handsome lady. And the right is his brother, Sergei. And Sergei Vavilov is very famous. He became a famous physicist, co-director of the Vavilov-Chernikov effect, for which Chernikov received the Nobel Prize in 58, and he did not receive it because he had died. Apparently, you should know that the Nobel Prize is only given to living people. So his brother was a Nobel laureate. So how wonderful, really, that a family, two famous people, a geneticist and a physicist, come from the same family. So he come from good genetic stock. Okay. His career in 1911, he graduates from this Moscow Agricultural Institute. And already he's realized he's a comer. In 1913, he travels to Europe and studies with William Bateson. And this is Bateson. And of all the people to study, he travels with the guy who invented genetics. He was, by the way, at the John Innes Horticultural Society, so he worked at the Horticultural Society. And Bateson was the guy who coined the word geneticist, and he was a hero for Mendelism. So Vavilov goes there in 1913 and absorbs all this new genetics that's happening, a great start for his education. He becomes a convert to the new genetics. Okay, in 1917 to 21, he becomes a professor of agronomy at Saratov University. Okay, and then that eventually was set in Petrograd, and it was set in a palace, in one of the old palaces of the Tsar, so this wonderful institution. From 1921 to 40, he becomes director of applied botanics and selection at Petrograd, and that's reorganized later into the All-Union Institute of Applied Botany and New Crops, 24, and Institute of Plant Cultivation in 1930. So his rise in Russia is meteoric. He's really very famous from the beginning. Okay. However, in 1924, Vladimir Lenin dies and is replaced by Joseph Stalin. And this is a turning point in his life. And this is, as we'll see, a very sad story. Okay. He becomes 1939-30 to 1940, becomes head of the Genetics Laboratory in Moscow, later the Institute of Genetics of the USSR Academy of Sciences. He develops 20,000 people working for him with institutes all over the country, and he becomes the most famous plant breeder and geneticist in the world. So Russia really was in the forefront of genetics. Here he is in 1934 in Leningrad with a map of the centers of origin of cultivated plants, an inspiration for the global seed banks, and he was the one who started these seed banks. And of course, let's look at some of his accomplishments and awards. In 1919, just as a young man, he came out with a theory of immunity of plants to infectious diseases. So he gave, then he writes a book called The Theoretical Basis of Plant Selection, a three-volume work. And he really started the great work in breeding for disease resistance. Okay, in 20, he formed formulation for the laws of homology series and genetic mutability. And Folter here, Kevin Folter, will present the next lecture on that point. Very interesting. Okay. He wins an award for that, the Lenin Award, in 1926. So he's justly famous. He's a famous guy in Russia, okay? In 1926, he comes out with the centers of origin of cultivated plants, and he points out the center of origin is a center of diversity. And he establishes now germplasm repositories. Okay, and here are the famous centers of origin that we all studied with the same diagram of the eight centers of origin. And these are famous places now. You can see most of them are on the tropical areas. The glaciers didn't come and wiped everything out, and so that's where all our plants originated, the famous eight centers of the world. Okay, this is a picture of the maize display in his office. Okay, we often see this all over the country now in agronomy departments, but this was in his office. And of course, he develops these germplasm banks. And still today, I think the germplasm bank is the world's greatest collection of seed, with at least at this time 250,000 entries, maybe more now. How many do we have now? More? Okay, perhaps. But so this is a famous place that sent it from Vavilov. In 1931 to 40, he becomes president of the All Union Geographical Society. So he's a plant geographer. In 1932, he becomes vice president of the 6th International Congress of Genetics at Cornell University. Comes to the United States, and he travels all over the world. And this is a very famous picture. Here's Vavilov with Thomas Hunt Morgan in the middle and Nikolai Timofeev-Rozhevsky in the 6th International Genetics Congress in Ithaca. And, of course, Rozhevsky becomes a great population geneticist. So here, and here's Thomas Hunt Morgan. Later on, when genetics was ridiculed, it was called Mendelism Morganism. So he becomes the anti-hero of genetics. And so here are the three of them in Ithaca, New York, at Cornell University. Okay. He goes to California, and he meets some famous Russians who had emigrated, Dobzhansky and his wife, okay, Vavilov and Karpachenko. And he tries to get him to come back to Russia. He says, there's a new Russia. You need to come back. Dobzhansky doesn't do it. Unfortunately, Karpachenko did come back. He's a famous geneticist, okay, a famous horticulturist. He's written one of the famous classical papers in horticulture on allopolyploidy, and his end result is he was shot. So it was very tragic there. People were shot and killed, okay. And so this was to be a very fateful decision, and Karpachenko dies in 1939. Okay. In 1939, he was honorary president of the 7th International Genetics Congress in Edinburgh, Scotland, but he's denied permission to leave the country. And so, but he was so famous, they made him honorary president. After he died in 1955, his woman, Yelena Baryulina, who he had a very serious partner, publishes World Resources of Cereals, Leguminous Seed Crops, and the Utilization in Plant Breeding. So his work is published posthumously. And in 1964, they published Five Continents, Tales of Exploration in Search of New Plants, from his notes. So he becomes famous. Even his own notes become published. So he's certainly a great man. He's best known for his travels and plant exploration. And he goes all over the world in search of plants. He is the original plant geographer. He starts in 1916 going to northern Persia. In 1921, he visits the U.S., the USDA, experiment stations across the U.S. and Canada. One of the things he notices is sunflowers, okay? Sunflowers. He has something to do with that becoming a very important crop in Russia. In 1924, he goes to Afghanistan. Remember that country? Okay. He receives a gold medal for this trip by the Russian Geographic Society. And here's a picture of him in his car in Kabul, setting off his major expedition. The wonderful thing is about his trips, whenever you see him in his pictures, he's always got a shirt and a tie and a jaunty hat on. He really is a well-dressed guy. And so here's a great picture of him in Kabul in 1924. In 1926 and 27, he goes to Abyssinia, North Africa, the Middle East, the Mediterranean countries, and he publishes studies on the origin of cultivated plants, his most famous work. Here he is shaking hands with a guy named Kazamakh, the leader of the plant hunting caravan in Abyssinia. He's well dressed with his jaunty hat on, shaking this guy's hand. He looks quite aloof, doesn't he? Okay. He goes big trips in Central America and Mexico, and here he is in a Mexican seed market collecting seed, and there he is with his jaunty hat on, beautifully dressed, always with a tie on, and a very distinguished fellow. Okay. In 1930, he goes to North and South Mexico, Canada, Central America, Colombia, Peru, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Trinidad, Puerto Rico, and Cuba. Okay. And here, of course, he is collecting that seed. In 1936, he goes on an airplane, okay, to the Neural Experiment Station. So he's really traveling all over, and eventually that is held against him. 1936, an expedition to the mountains of Soviet Central Asia. And here he is again with his tie on, his hat. And even with the Caucasus expedition, with his horse going up the mountains, here he is with his hat, tie on. A well-dressed dandy, isn't he? Okay. Okay. But unfortunately, while his star rose, it crashed. Okay. And it was known as the Lysenko Affair. And it was an interplay of science and politics. Okay. It began as a controversy over evolution. And it started with the Luther Burbank of Russia, a guy named by Ivan Michurin, 1855 to 1935. He was a horticulturist, a breeder. He selected plants. He collected wide material as Burbank. And he was quite successful. But just like Burbank, his theories of inheritance were crazy. Okay, but anyway, Pavlov was a very good fellow, and he appreciated Michurin, and he brought him into prominence. So he was a good guy. But the work of Michurin created a split between fundamental genetic research by scientists and applied breeding efforts by men who did not understand the genetics and had crackpot ideas on inheritance. And this caused a split in the country. You know, it's not too different from what's happening in this country. We're getting a split. We have some people in this country don't believe in evolution, you know? So, I mean, don't believe in global warming. So I can understand how this could happen. Okay, so it turned out at that time the belief in acquired characters was to have an important political role. Why was that? Because the concept of altering inheritance by nurture was considered to fit communist ideology. So the die was cast when Stalin considered inheritance of acquired characters and accepted communist dogma. So when you have a situation where the political head decides what's correct and what's incorrect, you have problems. A little what's happening on in this country. You know, it's against the rule to do get information on gun deaths. People don't believe in climate change, so I can appreciate what's happening. Okay. It starts with a guy named Trofim Lysenko. Unfortunately, this guy was a horticulturist too, was educated as a horticulturist. Okay, here he is. He was a dour, mean-spirited guy. But, you know, he came up with something pretty famous. He came up with vernalization. Now, vernalization had been well-known horticulturally, but he got into prominence in 1929 by his work on vernalization when he took chilled seed of winter wheat to allow spring planting in northern areas. And at first it was kind of a success, okay? And this was, and then he also made the erroneous claim that this change could be inherited. So he really was not a scientist, okay? And he based this on a single plant, okay? And the scientific community really ridiculed him, but he went over because he had politics on his side. The hectares planted to vernalize wheat increased from 40,000 in 1932 to 10 million in 38, but then it really didn't work, and it was discontinued in 1945, so it disappeared. But it got him very famous. To show you what kind of guy he was opposed to hybrid maize, okay? And it was, and remember, Khrushchev came to this country and went to Iowa to get hybrid maize seeds, so it really set Soviet plant breeding way behind. Vavilov's genetic and breeding program is considered too slow to overcome the tremendous agricultural problems brought about by collectivization. And his fame and expedition began to be criticized. He was too slow, they wanted something faster, and Vavilov kept telling, yes, it was working, things were improving, but it would take, you know, 5 to 10 years to get new varieties, which we know to be true, but that was too slow for Stalin. Maturin biology, that's what it was called, Maturin biology, was proclaimed as the correct path, okay, and reactionary Mendelism, Morganism, was considered heresy and error. It was like the Inquisition, okay, and this was his downfall. And so the destruction and ruin of Soviet genetics was due to this triumvirate of Vavilov on one side, Lysenko in the middle, and there's Stalin patting Vavilov and pushing Vavilov, pushing Lysenko, and the die was cast. Okay, so the role of Stalin in determining biological orthodoxy becomes a frightening aspect of despotism. It's equivalent to the worst example of the Inquisition, in which the heliocentric model of Galileo was proclaimed apostasy, and those who adhere to it were to be burned until they retracted. And exactly the same thing happened. If you did not follow the political path, you were to be burned and killed. It's a horrible thing to consider. Okay. By 1936, arrests of geneticists morphed into judicial murder. They actually murdered these guys on trumped-up charges. Okay. Georgi Karpachenko, author of the classic paper of allopolyploidy and the brassicas, was shot in 1941. This is incomprehensible to me. Here the war was going on, okay? And yet they put efforts to take these guys, these famous guys, and kill them. It's frightening. Okay. In 1940, soon after a vitriolic exchange with Lysenko, Vavilov was arrested on an expedition to Western Ukraine. You heard of that place? Moved to a prison in Saratov where his mediator career had started. Okay. This happened because of the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact. They divided up Poland, and part of Ukraine all of a sudden became Russian territory, and they decided they would send an expedition out. And Vavilov was sent because they wanted to arrest him with minimum publicity. So they sent him on this expedition, and then they went after him and arrested him. Okay. And this is a very frightening picture. This is a mugshot of Vavilov after his arrest. And here's this wonderful man, okay, and here he is in prison, and he looks just terrible. It's really shocking. And here is his prison cell. He was going to be shot, but his brother was very famous. They finally got him to commute it to 20 years in jail, and so they left him in jail. This was the prison in Saratov where he had first started his career, and he was in jail there, and he finally died of starvation in 1943. It's a tragic episode that this could happen. Just an awful thing. His sentence to death was commuted, but he died in prison on January 23, 1943, of cardiovascular failure and dystrophy at the age of just 55. Gee whiz, he was a young man, okay? Undernourished and sick as a result of solitary confinement. An awful thing, okay. Finally, in the 60s, after there was a change, okay, he was rehabilitated, and books began to be written about him in Russia. He's on postage stamps, and he is now rehabilitated, but it is too late. Okay, let's look at his career again. Okay, Nicholas Vavilov was an extremely attractive man, well-read, likable, and tolerant, with an engaging personality. He really was. He was a terrific fellow. He was exuberant, energetic, a tireless worker with a photographic memory. He was multilingual. He spoke all kinds of languages. He was brilliant. He learned local languages and embraced farmers. He was just the guy you want to be the head of agriculture in a country. A humanist, a guy who understood agriculture, understood growers, widely traveled, well-spoken, well-liked all over the world. Okay, just a second. No, okay. Okay, he was internationally known and respected by geneticists and plant breeders. His scientific work was extraordinarily productive. He just, stuff poured out of him. Even in jail he was writing up his notes. He published widely and as a man of action was able to carry out a tremendously productive program of experiment stations, collections, and research stations. Okay. Okay. However, Vavilov had the misfortune of coming into the crosshairs of despotism, okay, and was ruthlessly destroyed. His worked out to be his heritage, and his stature has increased over time, while his opponents, as Torquemada in the Inquisition in Spain, will only be remembered in infamy. And finally, my last slide. This is Vavilov, martyr of science, and this is one of the last things he said. We shall go to the pyre, we shall burn, but we shall not retreat from our convictions. He's something we should remember and honor, and we do. Thank you very much. Ken.